In his 1992 election campaign, Bill Clinton immortalized a line. What was it? It's the economy, stupid, which means everything else doesn't matter. But if you promise voters to improve their economic status, then they will vote for you. And if you deliver on the economy, you keep winning. So politics is about economics. Now, this week's National Interest is asking the question, does this logic still apply to Narendra Modi's India? But before I go there, let me also remind you that as far as we are concerned, as far as the media is concerned, the print is concerned, like any other media organization, our economics is quite simple and it does not follow any complicated logic of politics or personal appeal and things like that. Our economy needs capital to survive, to grow, to thrive. And for us, that capital is the paid subscriptions that you take. So with this video, I'm also sharing with you a link for our subscriptions. So please take one if you haven't taken one. It doesn't cost very much. If you've taken one, a one-time subscription, please renew it or make it regular or monthly. And if you already taken a monthly one, thank you very much. But please pay up your due payment on time, because that is what keeps us going. And we keep on improving our offering to you week after week after week. And I promise you, over the next 3 to 4 weeks, you will see a lot of quantum changes and improvements from us, because we know that our proposition to you has to be quality, whatever a politician might offer to a voter. Because in any case, we know that you, our readers and viewers, are not as gullible as voters tend to be in most democracies. You are smart people. So it worked for Bill Clinton in 1992. It got him re-elected because he delivered on the economy. And you've seen since then, for about 25 years, leaders across the world picked up on this dictum. It worked for them. Is it still working for them? That is the question. Now, 2014, Narendra Modi came to power again on the same promise that I will bring the Gujarat model. It was the first time that a chief minister in India's history was selling as his key proposition his track record of multiple terms as chief minister in his own state as a national offering. And he won a famous victory. So he made a big promise on the economy. More jobs, more growth, sabka saath, sabka vikas, etc. At the same time, he also promised to deliver on self-respect, on pride, fighting terrorism, and Hindutva, the Hindu culture, the Hindu identity. Now, if you look at what he has done over the past 7 years, I think it will be quite safe for me to say, at least factual for me, safe I don't know, because you know, people get angry and I may deal with some brickbats on social media. But the fact is that on his first proposition, that is on the delivery on the economy, his performance has been quite dismal. I would say that he has failed to deliver on his economic proposition for the first 7 years. But on his other proposition, which is culture, identity, national pride, he's delivered 10 on 10. And in fact, maybe even 11 on 10. Because remember, I'm not talking about everybody. I'm talking about his voters. Because in today's politics, your core vote is very important, or your base is very important. If you can keep them with you, then you can get away with a lot. So that he has kept intact, but he has failed on the economy. And yet, he continues to get re-elected. Now, how does it happen? How is it happening elsewhere in the world and why? Look at America. Donald Trump lost in spite of his economy. Donald Trump had not given such a bad economy to America. In fact, the growth was good, job numbers were better. In a lot of areas, his economy was doing all right. So his economic proposition was all there. He lost in spite of it. He lost in spite of it, and in spite of the fact that not only did he retain his voters, but he increased the number of his voters in this election. But he lost because voters driven by other concerns, in this case, concerns of identity, race, ethnicity, language, culture, class, That came in the way, and all of them became too many for even his increased voter base. And he lost, I will say, in spite of the economy. So that it's the economy stupid logic did not work in his case, because Biden's offering to the voters was also not a great economic boom. It was to bring back some sanity, decency, most importantly, equality, fairness in the American system. So values or the lore or sentiments other than the economy worked in that election. Now, the thought process for this week was actually sparked by an article I read in the Financial Times by Ruchir Sharma. He said, for example, his central thesis was that while Biden is now weighing fresh sanctions against Russia, Biden must realize that sanctions will not work against Russia. One, because sanctions have their own problems. They don't work anywhere. But also because, he said, Putin has made Russia sanctions proof. And he has marshaled quite a bit of data to show why, because he says Russia now has humongous foreign exchange resources. It is not that dependent only on its oil revenues. It also does not run such a large debt. It has very small amount of national debt as a percentage. Its foreign debt is small as a percentage of its GDP. Never mind that the economy is not growing. That is what caught my attention. That economy is not growing in Russia, and yet people continue to re-elect Vladimir Putin. Now, you might say there are many problems in Russia's election system, and I list all those qualifications. I accept all those qualifications. And the fact is that India's election system, if anything, is enormously cleaner than Russia's. Never mind the one odd case where a bunch of vote-filled electronic voting machines decide to take a ride or a lift in a BJP candidate's car. Sarcasm apart, Indian election system is much fairer. But even the Russian system, even if you held a fair election in Russia, Putin would still win. Now, how does he keep on winning? It made me think. How does he keep on winning if his economy is not growing at all? In fact, while his foreign exchange reserves have risen, it's also true that his economy overall, his GDP, has contracted relative to other peers, especially emerging markets, including the other member states in the BRICS grouping. That is, the other states are Brazil, India, China, South Africa. Now, if you compare Russia with India, Russia's economy today at $1.7 trillion is about 60% of India's economy. And the way things are going, gap will keep on increasing, even though this has been a bad year for India. So Russia is not going to catch up with India. Of course, India's population is much larger. But why is it so that if his economy is not growing, which would imply that jobs are not growing, that people's incomes are not growing, why are people still voting for him? Now, people are voting for him because they know what came before Putin. Before Putin came a long period of political instability after 1989, after the decline of communism, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the decline of Gorbachev, and then you had all these other characters go in and out. So many that sometimes even I forget the order, Chernenko, Andropov, Yeltsin, so many of them. And then Putin came, and they think that Putin brought stability to Russia. So very important sentiment, stability. Second, Putin restored Russia's self-respect. In what sense? Russia did not become economically a big power again. But since Putin took charge fully, after that, the ruble did not evaporate as it had done at least twice in the past. Second, he strengthened Russia enough in terms of policy, in terms of military, that he was able to put down all the insurgencies, terrorism, whether coming from Chechnya or wherever, into Russia. Second, he was able to tell all his neighbors who the boss is. And he also punished the upstart, quote-unquote, upstart Ukraine by grabbing Crimea and by playing games with it all the time. And also then showing his influence in Belarus and other places. So to that extent, first, Russia Russia was restored as a regional power. And second, because of the way he began to manipulate the American system, particularly under Trump, and he improved his relations with China, it also looks like he put Russia back in the reckoning as a world power. If not at the same level as China, then at a level a little bit lower than China in terms of global power balance. So he got Russia to start punching way above its weight, and a lot of voters were happy. Now, why were they happy? Because we must remember that while the economy is a strong sentiment which drives voters' minds, there are also other sentiments. One is identity. Identity can be my religion, most important. So identity and culture are linked. So identity, the most important denominator of identity is culture or my religion. Or it can be my language, it can be my ethnicity, it can be my race, and also nationalism. So one is identity and culture, and second is nationalism and national pride. Because those things most people, most voters find non-negotiable. So most voters might say that, look, if my economic fate doesn't improve, I can take it easy. I can take time, I can make a sacrifice for now, but I will not accept the diminishing of my national pride or the stature of my country or the undermining of my religion, my language, my culture or my identity. So demagogues around the world have figured this out, that if you get your offering right on these two areas, on these two parameters, then the economy can wait. So Putin is a very good example of how that's worked. How this has worked in Narendra Modi's case in India. In Narendra Modi's case, 2014, I told you, he promised you a great economic boom, Gujarat model, etc. And also restoring national pride and restoring the majesty of the Prime Minister's office. Because under UPA, that seems to have been diminished. Now, I take you back, again, just as we talked about the years that led to the rise of Putin. Look at the years that led to the rise of Narendra Modi. So a bunch of things happened in those years. First of all, in the previous 20 years or so, or at least 15 years, between Vajpayee, the full Vajpayee period, and the full Manmohan Singh period, that's about 16, 17 years. In that period, you had these serial terrorist attacks coming in from Pakistan. Everybody believed that they were coming in from Pakistan, topped by 26/11 and 2008. So a sense had built up over these 20 years under both Vajpayee and Manmohan Singh. Because remember, it was under Vajpayee that the Kandahar hijack took place. It was under Vajpayee that the assembly building in Srinagar was blown up by a car bomber. It was under Vajpayee that parliament was attacked. It was under Vajpayee that many other attacks, prominent attacks, took place. And then it was under UPA that once again a series of attacks took place in trains in Mumbai and elsewhere, bombings in Delhi, Jaipur, etc., and also topped by 26/11. So there was a sense that was built up over a generation of Indians now, that a smaller country, a much weaker power, could come and bleed us anytime it wished. And all we did in response was to go complaining to the Americans, to the Brits, to the Chinese, to the Russians. So it looks like India was not behaving like the power it should be, that India was punching below its weight. That was one issue. The other issue was that India had economic growth between, say, 2002 and 2008. That economic growth had created a great mood of optimism in India. In fact, 2007 was the year of India. India Everywhere was the theme at Davos. And everybody was celebrating the rise of India. That optimism propelled UPA to their second victory in 2009 with larger numbers. Part of that had come from economic growth. Part of it had also come from India's rising stature. Also remember, that is when Manmohan Singh had signed the nuclear deal. He had defied opposition from his usual opposition, but also his allies, the left, who had left him, and also from within his own party to face a vote of confidence, and he had won it. So that prime minister looked stronger than before. So 2009, they came to power. The next 5 years, UPA completely changed direction. Over the next 5 years, the party began eating up Manmohan Singh's government. The party began talking of inequality, poverty, etc., instead of tom-tomming its economic success and growth. In fact, the party was in the contrary mood. Instead of saying 9% growth, they would say, oh, 9% growth, 91% destruction. And that blame was being laid at his door. And you saw increasingly that Manmohan Singh became weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. And his office had lost all its power and charm and respect. So Modi rode all of that. When he came to power, he delivered on one promise, which is restoring the majesty of the Prime Minister's office brilliantly, because he's now the strongest Prime Minister we have had, Indira Gandhi included. Because his party is in his control much more than even Indira's was in her times. Second, he's also shown the new assertive, aggressive side of India in the neighborhood, especially vis-a-vis Pakistan. So that has restored national pride. So he's delivered to you on national pride and identity in the sense of the temple, in the sense of many other things, and in the sense of having no hesitation in his obvious and stated display of Hinduness, if I may put it like that. So those are the two things that have driven him so far. The point is, how much further can it take him? Because he knows that so far these sentiments have saved him from his economic performance. His economic performance has been very, very poor. In fact, barring the first 2 years since he came to power, when he had some tailwinds from the previous era of growth, growth has been declining under him. Of the last 8 quarters, India's growth has declined. And this was before the pandemic came in. Once the pandemic came in, that became a big excuse. But during the pandemic, India's growth decline is the highest in the world among major economies. Now, when these bad figures began coming in, you knew that he didn't like it. So he was trying to fight them. His government would either try to hide those figures or try to rewrite those figures or change the rules. So the figures were calculated differently, say as with GDP. But nobody was fooled. 2019, he was re-elected with larger numbers. Before that, in Uttar Pradesh in 2017, he swept that election, even though the whole country, especially the poor people, the farmers, the small traders, they were all very badly wounded, very badly hurt by demonetization. Still, he swept that election because he was riding those two other impulses. Not economy, economy was down, but culture come identity and national pride, those were up. Now, it looks like he's a smart politician. He also thinks that maybe the use-by date on this is over. So he has to do something about the economy. And that's why you've seen this flurry of action on the economy. But he also knows that economic growth takes time coming. So this year will be easy because this year the economy will grow heavily because last year it declined heavily. So this will be the equivalent of what the stock market calls a dead cat bounce. So economy will go up, but economy takes a long time building up and translating into votes. Usually it's a case of you build the economy, you carry out the reform, immediate growth causes inequality, you pay the price for it, and some successor then benefits from it. And second, you cannot count on it. Also, it's very difficult to be sure of a big economic boom in, say, 2 years, because that is when the campaign for 2024 will start. So he will keep focusing on the other two sides. The important question is, his opposition, will they understand it? Because so far, they have shown no evidence of understanding it. In fact, they have waffled in those areas. They've concentrated their attack on him only in the area of economy and joblessness. But they fumble on issues of culture, like say on Sabarimala. Both the left and the Congress party made flip-flops on Sabarimala because they didn't understand cultural or identity sensitivities. So they made a big mistake. Similarly, on nationalism, they make big mistakes. That came out in their skeptical response to the raid on Balakot for the Uri surgical strikes and also the Galwan clash. So those are areas which they have now ceded, I would say, full-heartedly to Narendra Modi. And as long as that happens, even if he's not able to deliver big time on the economy, he will continue winning because you know what? We would like to change that principle that Bill Clinton started or launched in 1992. It's the economy, stupid. We will change it now to it isn't just the economy, genius.